Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. It's been, I think, about a week and a half, but we're back. The Socceroos have played their two games in the international window, against Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. They've come away with 2 points from a possible six. It was, we're going to discuss it later, but not ideal window for the Socceroos. And to break it all down, with me this evening on the podcast is returning to the pod actually after a bit of an absence, Antonis Pagonis. How are we?
Good to be back, Christian. I'm very glad that you're able to negotiate this return with my agent. I know it wasn't cheap, but it's great to be back. And yes, a lot of stuff to talk about as usual.
Yes, that's right. Every member of Front Page Football has an agent that I have to liaise with. It's unpaid work, but they have agents. I don't really get it. It's very surprising.
Let everyone speak for themselves, because those are not my terms.
Okay. So that money must have got lost then. Anyway, Caden Foley also joins us on the podcast. Caden, what's been, I think, a couple of weeks since you've been on, but keen to break down what you've seen in these two games. You were at the Saudi Arabia game, of course, as well.
Yeah, I was. Thanks for having me back, Christian, and for your correspondence with my agent, Fahid Ben Khalafa, who you said has not been happy with how I've been used in the podcast. But that's right. I've had a row with him, and he's not going to go on about it much more. So, yeah, good to be back.
That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Oh, man.
I haven't told him anything about my situation. So, Fahid, feel free to talk up on my behalf, please.
Caden coming out with the one-liners. Obviously, we had the infamous the brief said to overreact comment a few weeks ago. Now we've got the Fahid Ben Khalafa as my agent. So there we go. All right. I will endeavor to find the best way to use you in this podcast right now. So let's start it then, shall we? As always on the podcast, we'll just go through some results, some things you may have missed recently in the Australian football landscape. So just a quick recap. Obviously, it was an international break for the men's, but we did have the A-League Women's round three taking place. So Brisbane Roar, they continued their excellent start, actually, to the season. They beat Perth Glory 3-0 on Friday night. Sydney FC won the derby 1-0 against the Wanderers. Melbourne City and Central Coast Mariners 2-2 draw. Antonis, Adelaide United, things looking good. Three rounds in, 2-0 win at the exciting Canberra United. Definitely from the opening two rounds, but Adelaide really put a stop to their sort of promising start. 2-0. How you feeling about the Adelaide United women?
Yeah, it's like last season. There was hope coming into the season. We know last season didn't end up the way they were hoping, but coming into this season, again, a more solid preseason, an extended preseason, playing a A-League women's team in preseason for the first time in years. So already a solid preseason. Round one fell to a really good Melbourne Victory side, to a really good goal. And for them to win two away games in a row, I think is important to shake off that loser tag from last year after winning a wooden spoon, quite convincingly too, if you look at the ladder from last year. Well, no better way than to go to Canberra and win, to go to Western Sydney and win. So I guess the mental hurdle is out the way. Now they can bounce on and see how the season plays out. Important to remember that they're still missing a few valuable players in Dylan Holmes, in Chelsea Dorber, in Nana Sasaki, in Isabel Hodgson. So it's a talented team that will get only better. But again, some really young players looking fantastic. Alan Tonkin, for example, Sean Dewey. We haven't seen the best of some of these young players yet. probably because they haven't gotten the minutes, but I'm sure we will. And yeah, signings compared to last year, international players, they look fantastic. Someone like Erin Healy, Fiona Wirtz back at her best. So yeah, a lot of stuff to be positive about. Six teams make finals like last year, and they'll be hoping and believing that there can be one of them after this starts. We'll see how the season plays out.
Definitely a good start for Adrian Stenter's team. Elsewhere, Newcastle Jets beat Wellington Phoenix 1-0 on Sunday, and Melbourne Victory with a bit of a statement to the rest of the league, smashing Western United 4-1 at the home of the Matildas on Sunday as well. So those were the A-League Women results from round three. Elsewhere, big shout out to the Parramatta Matildas, who were crowned world champions, first ever football world champions. First ever Australian team to be crowned a football world champion, which is fantastic. 6-2 win over the US at the CP Football World Cup. Yeah, absolutely fantastic. They had in the group stage beaten the US for the first time ever, 3-1, and then they backed it up by like doubling that score. What's that? 3-1 to 6-2 in the final. So awesome achievement from the Parramatta Matildas. Elsewhere in the A League, so me and Antonis will be heading down to Sydney to check out Unite Round, second year in a row that we'll be there. So I don't know if you're listening to the podcast and you really want to meet us or something like that, then I don't know. Yeah, like come say hello by all means. We'll probably say hello. But the league announced that all the women's games this weekend have been moved from Leichhardt Oval to Netstrata Jubilee Stadium in Kogarah for this weekend. And yeah, all attendance now at those games is free. Any fans who have purchased tickets for Leichhardt have been refunded. So yeah, good to see that, I guess, in the circumstances, a relatively quick decision was made early on the week. But yeah, it's not ideal that the Unite Round's kind of been stuffed over a little bit with that. And what's the is there any update on the Sydney trains situation? Or we're looking at
There's a
no
strike.
Sydney trains, Antonis, this weekend.
No, so there's a strike. So yeah, that's
Okay.
going to be majorly impeded. So a
That's
lot
awesome.
tougher to get around. But again, as I said, pay your workers and look after you. And this has been going on for a while. It's going to inconvenience people. But yeah, not to get political, but there's a lot of
Yeah,
people that get
we will not make the
inconvenienced in their
podcast
everyday
political.
life. But you know, it's good to see the football community getting around each other, like the Ladies League organizing a shuttle bus on the Friday, and I'm assuming there's going to be fans that look after each other with getting from point A to point B, be it getting rides, be it getting shared Ubers or pointing people to correct public transport to use on a weekend. So again, it's not the biggest community in the world, but it's one that looks after each other. So I'm sure everyone's going to do their best to make this a good weekend.
And elsewhere in some A-League's news, Ollie Bazanic, he retired during the week, almost 200 appearances in the A-League, a Socceroo as well, A-League champion with the Mariners, so a bit of a shout-out to him. Some Aussies abroad news as well. We like to do a little bit of some highlights every week. So on the coaching side of things, Dario Vidasic is absolutely cooking at Brighton. They won again in the Women's Super League in England, 3-2 win over Katrina Gorrie's West Ham, and Katrina actually scored twice in that game as well. So, a really good, positive Aussie flavour to that game. Brighton, yeah, they're third in the league at the moment. They're only behind Chelsea and Man City in the Women's Super League. So, yeah, Dario, let's see how long he can keep that going, because that would be an unbelievable achievement if he was to, I don't know, finish top three or top four in the Women's Super League in England in his first season. Elsewhere in the coaching news side of things, Peter Klimovsky, who everyone might remember, of course, was on Ange Postecoglou's staff with the Socceroos, also with Ange at Yokohama initially. He's been on his own in Japan for the last couple of seasons, and he's going to depart FC Tokyo in Japan at the end of this J League season. So a couple more games to go there in Japan. We'll see where he goes next. And in terms of another item I wanted to mention here, Jack Hinger, of course, for those unaware, he plays his international football for Sri Lanka. He actually scored a winner in a friendly against Yemen as well. Other shout outs, I mean, actually, a lot of the Brisbane Roar players, so like Waleed Shaw played for Lebanon. And Raphael Struyck, of course, was Played a role for Indonesia in their win over Saudi Arabia, which is a big result for the Socceroos, of course, this morning. So, yeah, Brisbane getting some influence from some of their players on the international scene. And the final thing I wanted to mention here was, this was kind of earlier last week, that the host cities have been announced for the 2026 Women's Asian Cup, of course, being held here in Australia. So, Sydney, Gold Coast, and Perth. So, yeah. Any, Caden, any thoughts on any of those items there?
Disappointed to have no Melbourne for the Women's Asian Cup.
It's not very Vic great.
Not very Vic great of them, but that's all right. We'll see. Hopefully I can make my way down there in 2026 for one of the host cities.
Yeah, and Antonis, Gold Coast as a host city is bold after the Bahrain game.
Well, you get what you deserve. So if you want to take football there again, so... But on a serious point, it's pretty disappointing seeing a place like Queensland, who has shown no love for the game, get serious attention like that, while other states like South Australia and Victoria are disregarded, be it the regulations and the authorities, or be it the state's indifference. But yeah, disappointed but not surprised.
Yeah. All right. We're going to, as we usually do, we'll just take a quick little break here to break up the podcast a bit. When we come back, we're going to have a real full kind of in-depth review of the two games from the Socceroos. And then later on, we'll finish with some predictions for Unite Round in the A-League Men. So we'll be back in a moment. Okay, so we're back and we're going to talk about the Socceroos now. So, of course, first game, nil or draw with Saudi Arabia in Melbourne. As you mentioned at the start, Caden was there covering the game for us. Socceroos, arguably, well, in my opinion, I think Antonis agrees, definitely the better team on the night against Saudi Arabia, and probably deserved 3 points. Didn't take the chances when they needed to, and almost came away with nothing, of course, with the disallowed goal at the end. Then this morning, recording this on Wednesday night, this morning, I got up at 4:30 to kind of watch the Socceroos essentially do a very similar thing. It's just that this time they got an early goal against Bahrain. Then they conceded two freakish sort of goals in different ways in a couple of minutes. And then, of course, Cassina Yenge sort of, I guess, bailed the team out a little bit and saved the face with a late equaliser. But again, the overarching feeling coming out of that second game against Bahrain was the same. Should have been 3 points. So, excuse me. Caden, I'll start with you because, well, what we're going to do is we're going to go around and kind of give what we kind of learnt from these two games. I think there was many things you could kind of draw from the two games. There was a lot of similarities between both performances too. Well, Caden, do you want to start, I guess? And we'll kind of just discuss each of our thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, sure. So my one was that I think Australia's midfield is their biggest issue at the moment, playing-wise. I understand a lot of people will say that our strikers and our more attacking players need to finish their chances, which is true. They do need to improve on that. But I think if we had a midfield that were much more adept at really breaking through defenses, breaking them down, you would put those attacking players in much better positions to finish off better chances. Obviously, Mitch Duke cops a lot of flack, most of it undeserved. But if he's not the type of striker that's going to break down defenses, so if we can have someone else to help him get open, get in the box, that's going to pay dividends for Australia in the long run. From the game I attended, which is the Saudi Arabia game, we started Jackson Irvine and Aidan O'Neill. That was a very non-creative midfield. And I think having someone like Max Ballard in the squad and not using him over the both games is a massive waste, especially in the Bahrain game.
All right. So you're kind of you're saying that the midfield selection kind of needs to be reviewed from moving forward, and potentially maybe looking at some other options, you know, for future squads. So because I think this kind of draws into you talked about, you mentioned there about like the Saudi Arabia game, the midfield not being as creative, maybe in creating chances. I mean, that kind of is true in the sense that a lot of the chance, the two main chances in particular, that were created by midfielders. So one, which Aidan O'Neill helped create, winning the ball, eventually led to Aidan Hrustic having a shot. Then Jackson Irvine basically created his own chance, which he put over the bar. But they were both from pressing moments, I guess.
Yeah. And
so, yeah, I guess people... But my thing is, so like, yeah, Ballard didn't play. So there's a little bit of frustration about that. I thought Caceres was fine against Bahrain. I actually thought, because obviously, Caden, you wrote a piece after the Saudi Arabia game where you, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I do think Irvine has some struggles when it comes to playing against an opponent that sits deep and parks the bus, and essentially you need to break it down. But I actually thought Irvine was good this morning against Bahrain. I don't know. Maybe, yeah, Aidan O'Neill probably hasn't shown that creative spot. Maybe Caceres is a better option because of his ability to play forward passes and to just be a bit more creative. But I don't know. I don't know if that was the biggest issue. I think...
I will say just one thing. I get that, what you're saying about having players who are good, like winning off the ball, off the press. But Max Ballard is that player. Ever since going to the Netherlands, he's improved defensively, like ginormously, where they're calling him like the Australian N'Golo Kante over there. He's winning. He's becoming a really big ball winner in the in his team's midfield over there. So if you have him in there, for either Irvine or O'Neill, I in my article I wrote, I said probably over Irvine, but either one I think is fine. If you had him in there, you're not having a player that's so one-dimensional. You got a player who can be good defensively and a player who can be good on the ball, where Aidan O'Neill and Jackson Irvine, they're defensive midfielders, but they're not like forward playing midfielders, if you get what I mean. So you need to have someone who can do both in that lineup, which I think, so yeah, I think using him was a big waste.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I think if we're just talking specifically about Ballard, I think you could say, you know, like Hayden Matthews made his Socceroos debut before Max Ballard, if you were looking at it like that and saying that's a little bit surprising. I've got another kind of point about this, but I think Irvine and Ballard actually as a midfield duo together, so not taking Irvine out, which I don't think, you know, even though Ryan was dropped, there seems to be a bit more of a, maybe Irvine's leadership is more important to the team. Who knows? I don't know. But I think that duo could work well together. But it still doesn't feel to me like it's kind of an area of the pitch, I guess, that needs to be solved. I guess Caceres is one who could be used maybe further forward, maybe in one of those 10 roles at some point too, if needed. But we do have, you know, options there as well. My main thing with this is, like we mentioned just then about how the Socceroos created those chances against Saudi Arabia off pressing moments. Like I just don't feel like when we watch the Socceroos midfield, if we're focusing on that right now, like we should expect it to be creating a lot just in possession in terms of breaking a low block. I think against Bahrain, we did a decent job. I think I mentioned Irvine there. I think he actually played a couple of nice diagonals in the first half, helped kind of open the game up a little bit. But like we've got to be careful about putting some unrealistic expectations, I feel, on this midfield a little bit too. Because I just, you know, I think in moments this team is capable of breaking down like a deep block and with some creativity creating chances. But I think ultimately a lot of it is going to come from set pieces and pressing moments. So yeah, and I'm keen to get obviously Antonis's sort of thoughts on this as well. But Caden, did you have something?
Yeah, I'll just say like I'm not, I don't think many fans are expecting like Australia's midfield to be like the second coming of Xavi and Iniesta, but like I think we can expect a bit more from these players. Like I think we can, yeah, I think we need a bit more from them.
But don't you think against Bahrain, like, well, really in both games we create enough where you can say that I guess the creativity wasn't the main issue?
I guess maybe in these two games, but I'm thinking about over a long term, like or when they're from like a big sample size. Yeah, sure. Like in these two games, we probably should have won both of them quite comfortably. But over the next 12 months, I think we're going to revert back down to the mean again if the midfield doesn't make some changes.
Okay, Antonis.
So I'll start with Irvine because again, it's easy to forget this guy is a captain of a Bundesliga club. So we're not like Japan where that stuff's normal. You've got guys playing here, guys playing there. So for me, I almost think he's one of the first names on the team sheet. So if you're going to build a midfield, you're going to be building it around him or with him in it. Also, he's a threat on set pieces. So for me, he's going to be sticking in there. When we talk about Ryan, it's not just about leadership. It's he made a move where he knew he wasn't going to play. So it's kind of
Oh,
okay.
that
That's,
was.
yeah.
I mean, I didn't really. I don't think that's really a thing which is weighted heavily here. But yeah.
And the thing in that situation is, well, the new goalkeeper coach as well pick the goalkeeper they see in the next few years. But that's besides the point. I do believe we created plenty or to win the both games, in my opinion. But again, it gets to a point where you have to convert that stuff. And if you know they're going to be few and far in between, you need to make sure you take those chances. And in both games, especially the Saudi Arabia game, it's just one of those weird games that have become almost normal sometimes with us that we feel like we should be winning that game, but we end the game feeling, oh, thank God we got a point out of that. Which isn't, or those are two extremes. Because that was a Saudi game that we should be winning, and then thank God that was marginally offside and we didn't lose it. So when you're feeling like that, well, it seems that you feel that you had chances to win it, be it that square ball that they miraculously saved off the line. But then you, because you don't take your chances, you open up yourself to a moment of madness. We got two the other day. Or this day, today, rather.
This day, it's a different way of saying today.
yeah, it's at some point you need to take your chances as well. And we can talk about coaching, and we do talk about coaching because we love talking about coaching because Australians love nothing but a clear scapegoat. And we've talked about this. Can the coach amplify issues? Absolutely, they can. But when an issue exists over multiple cycles and coaches, well, there's obviously something else at stake there. And again, you can talk about the quality of strikers. Those strikers don't ask to be selected. They're obviously the best of a bunch. You can argue if you want Yenge or Duke. I've got my opinions on that as well. But again, whoever's there has to take the chances because we talk about Mitch Duke not taking his chances. Well, Kassina Yenge scored a couple. First one, very opportunistic. The second one, a poacher's finish. We'll remember the two goals. In a few years' time, we'll forget that he should have scored three or four. And then those moments of madness don't impact us. So again, we create, we'll never be a team that creates like crazy. But we've had a lot more barren runs in creativity than we've had recently, is my point of view. And now I feel at some point you need to take your chances. And you know, if there's a God up there, he or she really wants us to advance because all these results are going our way, but we keep saying no, thank you. We'll try again next time.
Where do you stand on, because like that was put to Popovic, I want to say before the Saudi game. No, I think it was after the Saudi game. I think
After
someone,
it was Vince Rigari
that's
asking
right.
about Duke,
Yeah.
yeah.
Vince asked him about, he kind of said, is it kind of horses for courses with Irvine and O'Neill? Like you just kind of, that's what you've gone with as the kind of, I guess maybe easiest sort of midfield pairing to just put together based on experience, or you know, Antonis, where do you see, like, how do you find Caceres, I guess, in the Bahrain game? Do you think Ballard is someone looking ahead to China and Indonesia in particular that could really contribute from a starting point, or would you just kind of leave that midfield pairing?
See, I would like to see Ballard, like Caden said, but if World Cup starts tomorrow and we've got three group games we need to tough out, the combination has to be Irvine and O'Neill. One, because it's tried and tested and the coach obviously backs it. I do like, though, how, and I know result didn't go our way, this isn't why it didn't go our way, I did like seeing Popovic play around with his lineup with a few players trying out a Yenge, a Caceres, a Hayden Matthews in a game like this, because we've lambasted coaches in the past who have had games like this and have gone with a tried and tested and gotten them 1-0 or something like that. So I don't mind seeing him tinker and looking for a best combination, or seeing, oh, there might be something here that we can take to another level that can improve our team. Because again, these are the games you get this from. There were two moments of madness here that saw Australia drop points, but again, that goes back to converting chances. So I did like seeing players like Caceres, Matthews, Yenge get a chance. I would like to see someone like Ballard get a chance as well. And those are moments to see them. So good to see the coach actually experimenting. We'll see if anything changes in the foreseeable future, because, again, you can't really experiment in the next couple, can you?
No. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because when I saw the lineup for the game, today against Bahrain, I was kind of like, whoa, like... Popovic seems to be taking this approach. I mean, the other thing here with him, which is interesting, is I feel a lot of it is also based on recovery and fitness. It seems like he really prioritizes that. So if a player's not actually, like, pulled up well on the two games of the window, if come the second game they haven't pulled up well from the first game, they're going to be on the bench, like, regardless. Yeah. That's what it seems like. So,
from his time in the A-League, right from the first man with the Wanderers, that's a big focus. You need to be fit, you need to be ready to go. Yeah. We need you to run yourself to the ground for us. So he is a coach for me that if he doesn't see, not that you are unwilling to do it, but you're not physically able to do it, he's going to pick someone who's capable.
And I don't mind that in this context, because we always, like, lambast the fact that, oh, we have to do all this travel to Asia and our players get in late for the games and we don't have many sessions together. So why wouldn't you try and mitigate that by actually playing the team that's freshest? Yeah. So, I don't mind it. Last point on Irvine and just kind of midfield discussion, then Antonis, I'll throw to you for your sort of takeaway from the two games. But I think the other thing with Irvine, so I know with St. Pauli, I think he does operate a bit more closer to a six from what I've read and stuff, but I actually think in the national team, he's better, like, as an eight, box to box. And I don't think in this current system, it's actually getting maybe his best qualities out of it. But I also understand why he's just used as one of the options there in the pivot. But, like, in the second half against China, going back to that game, for example, I think he helped kind of change things a little bit in the second half, because he was just kind of released a bit more to go further forward, make late runs in the box, kind of do the things that we've seen him do previously. So, So we'll see if anything changes on that front come March, the next two games. Antonis, biggest takeaway from the two games, what is it?
The more things change, the more they stay the same. Was the big takeaway from that for me, because we've seen the story before, haven't we? We've seen a very similar cast of characters. We've seen a different coach take this approach to the Asian Cup. And again, we've talked about this, Christian, that South Korea game. If Graham Arnold had that game play out 10 more times, he'd wanted to play out the exact same way with one difference. Take your chances. So I know I've touched on that, but again, when it's not the coach, when you change some of the players, it's the same thing. There's something deeper here. Don't ask me what it is, because I don't get paid enough to have that analysis. I'm not qualified to have that analysis. But again, Football Australia as a entity is something that's worthwhile digging into, because again, that can cost you World Cup qualifications. That can cost you a lot of things. And again, where our reality is in the Asian world of football is, yes, we're going to have games where we are the dominant side, we have a lot of the ball, and we should be creating and scoring. But when push comes to shove, when we go to quarterfinals in the continent, when we go to World Cups and get drawn against really good teams, or if we advance like we did in the last one, your reality is you won't have the ball. You have to be solid defensively. You will create a couple of key chances. You must take your chances. If that doesn't happen, then you are susceptible to moments of madness. And yeah, if Bahrain can do that twice to you in 2 minutes, quality players can pick you apart as well as you defend. So if you're susceptible to acts of God or acts of brilliance, well, you need to help yourself with your chances. And that hasn't changed. And that's where I come into this. Because again, we drop points in two very different ways. And we drop points though. And for me, the root cause is you're not taking your chances. You can argue about the amount we're creating, but again, you should be scoring a tap-in. You should be able to put Bahrain to bed before they decide to score a meme highlight reel in 2 minutes.
So my point is very similar, but I guess I'll mention later, kind of more looking ahead. But so I guess the chances outside of the goals, you had Yangi in the first half, had the one McGree little ball across, looked to lift it sort of over the goalkeeper, but a really good save. You had the Yangi one in the second half where Bayich basically got like to the byline. He cut it back to him and then it was just kind of like, hey, can you just shoot? Because there's like a 85% chance this ball's probably just going to go in the back of the net. There was, he hit the woodwork as well, Yangi again. But that one was kind of a bit more of an opportunistic finish. I'm not going to knock him too much for that. And there's definitely one or two others off the top of my head I think those are the main ones. Those were the main ones. So a lot of it was Cassini. Hrustic. Hrustic, just before the equalizer, had a very similar chance to the one he had against Saudi. It was just on his right foot, and he really similarly just kind of P-rolled it into the keeper's hands. And like that's where... So I fully agree with what Antonis is saying. We can't... So we need to stop looking at things through the lens of just because the Socceroos have not scored goals, it's the coach's fault. Because now I always say this, I've said this many times when we've talked about Socceroos on the podcast, a coach's job is to set the team up in a way to achieve success. And in other words, like when I'm watching a game, it's, can you set this team up to create? Because creating chances is fundamentally, particularly with this team where it's at the moment, is fundamentally the barometer and the measure of success. So if the Socceroos aren't creating chances vis-a-vis Bahrain at home in the Gold Coast, then there's serious problems with, yeah, the coaching and things need to be looked at there. But if they are creating chances and they're not taking them, and that's happening in multiple games, and as Antonis mentioned, now over multiple coaches, well, the players have to take ownership for that. Like, that's the reality. And we can't create this culture where you're protecting players. Like, that's what it feels like. It's almost like, don't protect the players. Now, some people say, and I agree, well, maybe the players are feeling a certain pressure because this is actually, we're talking in kind of in our group chat today, and Cody Ajayda mentioned to me, he made a good point. Like, maybe some of the attackers of Socceroos are feeling some pressure because you look at how Mishuk is like slanted after every single game. Are they feeling some sort of psychological pressure when they go out there about, hey, if I miss chances, I'm going to get death threats after the game? Like, of course, that could be playing out. My response to that would be, all right, well, if that was a reason, like, do Football Australia have something set up? Is there some sort of psychology? Is there some sort of mechanism in place to deal with that when players come into camp? Because the other thing here is, like, even the other thing I was going to mention, now I've remembered, not just the chances, but there are also multiple times in this game where I felt it was Irvine and McGree a couple of times. And Ryan McGree, by the way, best player on the pitch against Bahrain this morning. Absolutely fantastic. I'm actually at the point where I think he's Australia's best player. Yeah, and I know, like, probably neck and neck with Craig Goodwin. But anyway, as Antonis gives me the SA grade signal. But even he, who is having a great season at Middlesbrough, he's full of confidence. You can see it when he's out there playing just in possession. But there were even moments in the second half where I felt he's like laying the ball off to Bayich out wide, but it's like, hey, you know, you're on the edge of the box. You got a nice left foot in you. Like, why not have a dig? And it just feels like the players, when they come into the international environment, they're almost second guessing themselves a little bit. And Antonis, yeah, before I throw to you, the one other thing I'll mention on this, and credit to Matt Olsen for reminding me about this one too, was this was really similar for the Oli Roos at their Asian Cup campaign, where the team had been doing really well leading up to that tournament. And a lot of the players were in good form too, but then they went into the tournament, international football, and they just couldn't take their chances when it mattered. It's almost like this lack of understanding that the game's about moments. And I almost felt there was a complacency this morning too of like, hey, if I miss a chance, it's all right. The next one's going to come because this game's really easy for us and we're dominating and we're creating a lot of chances. But as we saw, the freak of nature stuff that happened with Bahrain, like things can turn just like that and you have no idea what hit you. So yeah, that's kind of the main thing I want to get out there, because Australia, like, there's going to be chances against China and Indonesia for sure. Australia are going to have some moments, and they just have to be more clinical. Simple.
Two things I'll bring up, and then after I bring them, I feel free to speak about either one. Number one, how much of that falls down to actual match sharpness? How much football do you play? How many times have you found yourself in that position in a high pressure environment where you're trying to be, when they're trying to stop you, and you've got that confidence to hit at the back of the net? Because, and I know it's a different level, because we're seeing that with Chris Wood right now, don't we, with New Zealand. He's the player of the month in the Premier League, and he goes, and I know the opposition in Oceania is completely different, but he's confident because he's doing that in sold-out Premier League stadiums. And I'm not talking about it being sold out, but in real game, in action, how often are our forwards not just scoring, actually playing quality minutes to get into that situation? It's a very big thing. And again, amplified because you're getting on the plane to the other side of the world with little rest. Amplified because you're playing with guys that you don't play and train with every week. So that's one thing. The other thing for me is we create timely chances. What do I mean? We create chances in the important parts of the game that if you score there, you look good. And I know of timely chances because the last time Craig Goodman was in Adelaide, and I'm going to make it about Adelaide because it's a very good example. If you remember,
for fuck's sake.
Yeah. If you remember the ladder, 2022-23 season, Melbourne City on top, 55 points, nice and clear. Mariners behind them are 44, but looking fantastic. And behind the Mariners, 2 points behind Adelaide United, who had no right to be there because they had conceded something like 11, 12 more goals than the rest of them. Why were they there? Well, there's a socceroo by the name of Craig Goodwin that specializes in the future in timely A-League goals. Not just scoring and stat padding for the sake of it, but scoring goals when his team requires it. What I'm talking about now is socceroo scoring to kill off a game, not scoring just another goal. Well, again, scoring a goal. Let's take Kusini Yenge's goal. His goal today won us a point. If it came 45 minutes earlier or half an hour earlier, we won us 3 points. So that's the timeliness kind of things I'm talking about. That yes, you can create chances, but you need to take them in specific times. Otherwise, they mean completely different things. So that's my other point. And again, that links to the match sharpness and all those things. So it's a big spot.
Yeah. I guess there seems to be like almost like a lack of understanding from some of our attacking players about the importance of that timeless. I don't know.
I don't doubt there is. I think they get it. But once you miss it, you don't have a time machine to go back. I wish I had that moment.
No, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's every chance, you know, every time we see the XG sign, the XG shows us the likelihood of the goal going in from there. But there's a lot of other things in it as well that are not considered. How much football has this guy played that's having that chance? The guy he received the pass from, did he expect the pass there? Are they on the same wavelength? all these, how confident, how many times has he buried it from there in the last 4 or 5 months? Has he done it in training or in the game? How desperate are these defenders in front of him? Are they that sharp? So all these things, it's like a microcosm of these things coming together, and I'm getting very little things make big things happen here. But
No, I
that's
like it. It's
the
good. Yeah.
reality of it. And you can go to very specifics like that, but we're talking about games of moments. We're talking about, again, one of those chances that you mentioned, Cassina Yang, he scores it. We're laying back here talking about how good are we? Like, we've just about qualified for a World Cup here. If we have a couple of decent results, we're heading to Japan, our home, Saudi away after laughing. Well, that's not the case because the goal gave us 1 point and not three. And it's because it came when we needed one to spare our blushes instead of getting it to put our foot down another team's throat that we should be dispatching quite easily if we are serious with ourselves.
Yeah, so Caden, I'll bring you in. So I've got a point about Antonis' sort of match sharpness point in a sec. But you mentioned in your article about like someone like Michuk, who didn't play against Bahrain, of course, only played against Saudi. But we have spoken about like his work rate off the ball, how good that is. You mentioned that in your article. You actually touched on like, and this is a question for you, like, do you feel the Socceroos actually need to find, I feel like this team really does need to find like a number nine who actually is like a one chance, one goal type striker. I think it's actually the type of thing that can really elevate what this team's doing because, you know, we haven't spoken about this yet, but defensively, the Socceroos, you know, particularly in these four games, have been fine. Like people will talk about, you know, oh, they conceded twice against Bahrain, but like we mentioned, like they're such free goals. The first one, and then even the second one, you know, with the ball, you know, yeah, Matthews probably would like to have that one back. That's true, but it's also a 20-year-old on his international debut, so I'm not going to knock him too hard for that. But my point is, do you feel like we need contributions from a bit of everywhere, or is that so unrealistic, and we just need to find like one or two like real regular contributors that like a Craig Goodwin that we can actually go, hey, we need a goal right now. We're on top. We need you to step up and actually take this chance, you know? Because you look at, yeah, like New Zealand are probably going to make the World Cup with the way things are structured now. When they go into their group, like Chris Wood is going to be that guy for them. It's going to be like when we have one chance, you're going to need to take it. And like we can say, if I was a New Zealand supporter, yeah, I'd have confidence that a Chris Wood could take that chance. Right now, I'm looking at Socceroos, and outside of, yeah, probably a Craig Goodwin, I don't really have much confidence in anyone else to take that chance. But where do you stand kind of on this conversation?
Yeah, look, obviously it'd be nice to have a striker like that or just a player like that who has the ability to always get the chance needed, but that's easier said than done. Those kind of players don't grow on trees. And so I think in the meantime you need to ask for more from the group as a whole. I think with Mitch Duke, like I said in the article, I've seen a lot of people like on Twitter like replying to our posts on Twitter sharing the article saying, "Oh well, if Michuk scored, we would have won both games or just won the Saudi game." But like, doesn't you know, I don't. One of my kind of football philosophies, I guess if that's the right word, is that you don't actually need a striker who can score like a bunch of goals. You just need.
Spoken by a true Arsenal fan. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. You just need a player who can. You need a striker. Sorry, you just need someone in that position who can open up space for other players. So, like for Michuk, you're opening up spaces for Craig Goodwin, Aiden Hrustic, Jackson Irvine, and Riley McGree. He's doing that successfully as we saw in the Saudi game. So why would you drop him? Because he's not scoring like a goal every second game. Like it's not the 1980s anymore. The football's evolved from that. It's a much more complex game these days. So yeah, obviously with that being said though, yeah, of course you'd love to have like a Chris Wood type player, but that's just not not realistic at the moment. That's just not on the cards. I think maybe I said in my piece, we've got the Touré, we've got Mohamed Touré. He looks like someone who could have the potential to be someone like that. But he's still got a long way to go. So obviously, yes, I would like to have a striker who can do it, but that's easier said than done. I will say one more thing, though. I think you speaking about we need to ask more from the players. The players need, like, that's what you're saying, right? Like,
Yeah,
I think we
I
need.
just think it, over these two games, it became clear to me, particularly, like, just to explain it further, like the Bahrain game in particular. Saudi at home drawing nil all, fine, whatever. Like, it can happen. You can have an off night in front of goal, no problem. But it's more if we played badly against Bahrain and drew two all and kind of got away with it. Like, I would look more towards the coaching and what's happening there. The fact that we actually played pretty well and were controlled most parts of the games. Like, there was a point in like the 60th minute of that game where I'm just kind of like, okay, like, surely we're going to get the second goal here and no worries. Like, game done, move on to the next, right? And the fact that that didn't happen, and not just that, but then the script just flips so suddenly. It's just kind of like by the end of it, you're just going like, are you guys serious? Like, really? And that's just kind of how I felt at the end of it. And really, I just came to the conclusion that we got to stop. We don't want to always point the finger in terms of like we have to look for blame for everything. And I know that's very popular in Australian football, but I think after a game like that, it's more for the players too. Their performance actually warranted a 2 or 3 nil win. It's actually frustrating from that point of view too, because the confidence of that, like, hey, yeah, we just walked into Bahrain, who beat us last time at home and won 2-3 nil, and we're in pole position to finish second. Like, imagine the buzz going into March with those guys, right? Like, that's also the other frustration with this. So, sorry, yeah, Caden, just to explain my point further, yeah.
I was going to say, basically, I think more questions should need to be asked of Football Australia as a governing body. I think of, like, just kind of them breathing almost like a philosophy of almost like mediocrity. I think so. For instance, we have the World Cup 2022. We get to round 16. We skirt. We get. Look, let's be honest. We got very lucky to get to round of 16. We shouldn't have given Graham Arnold another contract. I think it was obvious back then that he'd taken this team as far as he could. But they felt the need that, oh, well, we can't ask them all after a year our best ever result. So we now that means we're stuck on this path now where we're in a heap. Graham Arnold decides to step away, fine. Then we say, oh, okay, who should we get? And then we think the FA, it's sorry, it seems like FA are just thinking, oh, well, Tony Popovic, he became available last week. Let's just bring him in. Let's not do like a actual full-on search for who would be the best player. Let's just bring him in. He's a former Socceroo. What's him coaching? But then we don't think like Graham, like Tony Popovic, he's a good coach, don't get me wrong, but his flaws in his coaching are very similar to Graham Arnold's coaching. They get very defensively solid, but they struggle to score goals, which is like the one thing Australia needs, to score goals. Sorry, and Thomas, I'll just say, so yeah, I think we need to really ask them, like, are we just going to do the easiest option every time, or are we just going to actually have to make a choice, make some hard decisions? One more example of this is Tony Vidmar, head coach of the Ollie Roos, just took coached in coached the Asian Cup where they scored 0 goals. He's just been given a new contract. Like, why? Any other coach in any other country in the world would not get a contract after that. That's just going to keep breeding this environment of mediocrity into the Socceroos. It's just going to mean players are going to not maybe, like, they're just going to subconsciously think like, oh, doesn't matter, I didn't get the win, oh well, We'll just come back next time, try again. If that doesn't happen, too bad. We'll try again next time. But you'll be like, no, if it's got to be like life or death, like actually make some hard decisions. Stop just hiring like your mates all the time and just actually, yeah. So that's basically all. I'm just talking in circles now. But yeah, I think Football Australia need to be held to a bit more of account, which they haven't been.
Yeah, with Graham Arnold's situation, I completely agree with you, but I think it got to a stage where if you didn't give him a contract, you would have like mainstream media going after you as well, which
So, but then too
isn't a
bad.
very
That's just, yeah, that's like
common
the.
thing. And but I think in general, it was a pretty popular decision to give him a contract, despite the fact he was dead man walking a few months earlier. And really, again, I agree with you. I wouldn't have offered it to him. And when he resigns halfway, not well, at the beginning of the final cycle of qualifiers, you kind of have to make a quick decision. And I do agree that he can create that culture, but again, for any shortcomings that you reckon or people reckon in general, Popovich can have, I don't think he's someone that accepts mediocrity or low standards. So I'm sure he's going to put a rocket up anyone that does accept it. And I think we've seen this in the A-League, and I think he's made it pretty clear that what he stands for and what he wants this country to stand for in football-related terms. But completely agree with the Vidmar situation. It does need to be more scrutiny there. Before I give it back to Christian, I do want to make a comment about strikers because it is my pet peeve. You mentioned that strikers don't grow on trees. Well, even if they did, trees don't grow on concrete. And that's exactly the situation we've got going here in Australia and our competition, our one professional competition. That is not a place for young Australian strikers to play. Why? I don't know. I'll ask the clubs. It has been, let me finish, because it has been a situation for years. You look at the boy that scored two goals overnight, he came from the A-League, he got an opportunity in the A-League, because a club, his club, Adelaide United, gave him a chance. Wanderers backed him, gave him a chance, didn't even play him as a striker because they preferred to hire a Bosnian footballer who didn't look like a footballer to play him up front instead, and he played on the wing at Wanderers. But
Stop it. You love Suleiman Kerpic. Great
he
player.
pushed through it. He went to Europe, revelation in Europe. Cassini Yenge has his issues still with his body, but we got a good striker here. Okay, that's number one. Number two is, okay, we're going to get bits and pieces here and there. That's not how you find the next top striker. I'm sorry. Look at our current Socceroos strikers in the A-League right now. Someone like Adam Taggart, look at him early in his career, had to go from club to club to get an opportunity. Jamie McLaren's not in the league anymore. Same thing early in his career, club to club to get an opportunity. The other Socceroos striker was born and raised in Uruguay. The other one is playing in India. He's Scottish. So you can see the issue with if we don't back young Australian strikers, then how do we expect to get someone to finish our chances? I'm sorry. It's you. And that's why I don't engage in this conversation. I try not to about where's the next Tim Cahill come from. Well, if you can find a league where the next Tim Cahill is going to be backed in, I'll let you know. But until then, we can keep talking in circles around who's our next star striker. We might fluke one, but again, it's not going to be by design.
So a couple of things. But first of all, Caden, I think some very strong words. I think probably questioning Tony Popovich and like the appointment and stuff, I think it's just too early at this point.
No, I'm not questioning like Tony's ability to be successful. I'm questioning Football Australia's decision to hire him in the first place.
Well, yeah, but I don't think we can say after four games like it's been a disaster, or and I also think the thing
No,
we need to remember here is
I'm
that,
not. Sorry, I'm not saying it's a disaster either. I'm just saying that Football Australia need to. Like, for instance, the Matildas at the moment have got Tom Sirrett. They should have just appointed an interim like they have with the Matildas. And if we didn't qualify, fine. Don't qualify for the World Cup.
all right, well,
Because they've
okay,
got no
so.
meaningful game for a while.
It's a bit different. It's a bit different. But anyway, Caden, we can it's probably a discussion for another day in terms of the approach with that. So I wouldn't, you know, question Football Australia necessarily on that just yet anyway. And I think the only thing I would add on that is, you know, Popovich's availability was probably a really big factor in why he was hired. But also, if we want to ask questions of Football Australia, we're talking about this strike situation. Antonis's points are very true. The only rebuttal I'd have for that is, if I'm an A-League club, I wouldn't say this is right for an A-League club to think like this, but if I am an A-League club, like, I'm not thinking about producing a striker for a national team. That's just a reality. Now, whether that's right or wrong is a different debate. Again, not going to get into that here. We need to move along. I'm happy if you want to add an after I talk here. But my point is, like, I just mentioned how we've mentioned Vidmar there, Ollie Roos. Again, similar issue. There was no nine in that team who was there to score goals. Now, the subtext of all this, we should mention, Cassini Yenge did score twice this morning. He's done okay in a Socceroos shirt. There's no reason why Cassini Yenge can't be that player for the Socceroos, particularly come the next cycle. He'll be like 27, 28 in his prime, for example. So let's not... We've also got someone like a Thomas Waddingham playing in the league now coming through. But you talk about Mohamed Touré. Like, we were thinking about strikers, and I was reading, you know, when I was going through your piece, Caden, and stuff, and like, it's kind of like, so we're actually at the point where we don't trust some of these options, so we're hoping some 20-year-old, and in my Touré, you know, he's had some runs on the board, obviously a youngster with Adelaide United, but a 20-year-old comes in for his first camp and just sets the world on fire and is suddenly the solution to our striker problems. If you're doing that, if you're thinking that way, clearly there's some deep-rooted problem when it comes to development. And when we're talking about development, we're not talking about Football Australia in terms of what they're hiring on the coaching side. We're talking about what they're doing with development of strikers. And that's where the questions need to be. And that's where, hey, Ernie Merrick, what are you doing? What strikers are in place, et cetera, et cetera. That's the questions need to be asked. And I'm happy, you know, Ernie Merrick after the Asian Cup came out and kind of said, you know, very similar to basically what Graham Arnold said after the Indonesia game away, where it was like, yeah, we don't really have the quality at the moment to go toe-to-toe with these teams and stuff. And it's kind of like, okay, so what are you doing about it? Because this guy is been in that role. And yeah, development is something you don't see in 6 months and 12 months. You see it over a 5-10-year period. We should mention that. And I mentioned a couple of strikers there. Like, for all we know, in 5 years' time, Thomas Waddingham, 23 years old, 24 years old, he could be banging goals in Europe, and, you know, that's some evidence there that we're solving that problem. Who knows? But people, I think the problem is people don't know about what is in place and what Football Australia's approach is to development in these sorts of areas. So they just flick on a national team game, see that we look, you know, a little bit blunt going forward, or we're not taking our chances, and just think, well, what the hell is going on? You know, because I think, as we all agree, a lot of people who watch Socceroos games aren't watching the A-League every week necessarily. So yeah, Antonis, last point on this, and then I'll kind of, which I think I've kind of already given in this discussion, but yeah, my sort of takeaway. Yeah.
Just want to go back to your point about it's not, A-League clubs looking at it, it's not about producing the next international striker. Fair enough. Don't do it to succeed. Do it to survive, because we know how that competition is going financially. That's the first point. Yeah. Second point, back to Football Australia. Okay, so if the privately owned clubs that want to win trophies don't do it, what are you doing? Because they seem pretty keen to solve the goalkeeper epidemic that we've got, you know, because we've only got a captain of the Socceroos, Matt Ryan, goalkeeper, Mitch Langerak, that was so comfortable with goalkeepers, we called him back from retirement and then told him, actually, no, we don't need you, see you later again. And we've got a goalkeeper in the Premier League in Joe Gauchy, so I'd say we're producing goalkeepers all right. Well, in the local leagues that made the decision to stop international goalkeepers to help the next generation of goalkeepers, which is fine, no problem, but with my interview with Ryan Nield, English goalkeeper that you can read on the Front Page Football website, he made a really good point that, okay, you can ban foreigners, but what are you actually doing to make kids want to play that position, to enjoy playing that position? Again, being a striker is a very glamorous position because you get to chase after the ball, you get to take your breath every now and again, and you get to score and celebrate. Fine. What are we doing to actually encourage kids to take the position seriously? What are we doing to get clubs to actually teach them how to be strikers, to get them through the pathway to become their strikers in the lowest local clubs, and then they can move into these higher pathways? Again, saying things and doing things, two very, very different things. And on the striker front, again, I hear a lot being said by fans about why don't we have this, why don't we have that, but I'm not seeing a lot of things actually happening. And as you mentioned, there might be, we don't know about them. Let us know. Because we definitely don't
Well,
see it in our local league. We see it a lot more recently. Clubs like Brisbane backing Waddingham, clubs like Adelaide United playing two young Australian strikers. That's fine. But again, that is clubs being self-aware themselves. What
and
are the
that's only because they
systems to
can't afford to
encourage
buy for one.
A-League clubs, local clubs in general to produce? That's what we're waiting for. And like you said, if we made a decision Australia-wide tomorrow, we wouldn't see it happen tomorrow. But guess what? Maybe in 10 years' time, we're talking about how great our striker is instead of when's the next one coming along.
Yeah. And it's like the other position in the squad where this is like, and it's a bit more specific, I get it. But like we always talk about like right backs, like, oh, we have no right backs and stuff like that. And I almost feel like sometimes every squad that comes out, it's like, oh, right back is just a weak position. Like I think Popovich mentioned that in the squad announcement presser. It's like, okay, like, are we doing something to address that? And I don't know. And it's just kind of like, nah, we'll just kind of call back Ryan Grant to be a backup. It's like, yeah, but yeah. So it's another similar situation. Yeah, Antonis, yeah.
And again, going back to clubs and how to deal with it, I'll go back to Adelaide because it's a tried and tested example. Their current fullbacks, left back Ryan Kitto, captain, former winger, right back Dylan Piraeus, also a winger. So again, you need to be self-aware and producing, and also at the younger levels, not chucking someone at fullback because, oh yeah, you're a winger, but can't play you today because Johnny's a better winger, he's faster, so play fullback. Teach them. This is actually a pretty unique position. You can do this, you can do that. So again, it has to be self-awareness from the top down. It's not for Football Australia to just solve immediately, and it's not for one club, one local club to solve immediately. It has to be a concentrated approach. And that's why you see Japan coasting through our group half asleep while everyone else is fighting for their life. Because they've had a plan, they're on the same page, and they have been on the same page for a while.
Yeah. So my takeaway was that I just I and this factors into basically everything that we've just discussed in that sort of last 30 minutes or so. But like how can we really trust this team going forward against Indonesia and China? And I think a lot of people will now look at these next two games and think, I saw some commentary after the game this morning, and fair enough, like, yeah, it was. In the bigger picture, it was a decent result because Saudi lost to Indonesia and Australia still have their destiny in their hands. But like, I'm not sure if we've noticed yet. Like, we're not
Very
very good
unfair.
with the destiny in our hands. That's pretty clear, and I think actually I'll shout out Lockie Abel, who wrote a really good piece for on Roundball Australia. He spoke about after the Saudi Arabia game. He spoke about how. Like we Aussie DNA and stuff, but is Aussie DNA actually getting yourself into this sticky situation in the first place? Not the Hail Mary last minute. Hey, Andrew Redmayne saved some penalties for us in a fucking shootout against Peru. Like, and it's like, so next is it's Indonesia at home, isn't it? It will be the first game, in March. So Indonesia at home. Decent team in their own right. But you look at that and you think Australia created enough away from home against Indonesia to win. So I would expect them at home to create again. And there's going to be that moment again where, and moments where it's going to be, we have to take our chances. Unless Kasini-Yenge can bring that maybe sort of that, just that goal scoring confidence from that game today, maybe into that window, for example. I mean, that's also in March. So we don't know. from now till March, some of these guys, where they're going to be at a club level, that's going to be a big sort of factor in what happens there. But I don't have confidence in this team to take chances. That's what's concerning now is, yeah, they might, in saying that, they might have a game still where they're just on it because that's the nature of a footballer and you can have a good day, wake up at the right side of the bed, whatever it is. But yeah, I'm not too sure after watching those two games how anyone can feel necessarily comfortable that, yeah, destiny is in our own hands. Like, that's fine, but what if Indonesia have got some quality, we're dominating the first half, don't take our chances, nil or bang, 5 minutes in the second half, concede a cheap goal, and all of a sudden, like, you're looking at finishing fifth and sixth in the group. Like, that's the other thing about this, is it's not like, yeah, heads above water, we're second and everything's great. Yeah, in one game, this could go from second, things are great, to holy shit, we could be out of the thing altogether. So it's a very, very delicate situation. And yeah, my takeaway is that I just don't trust our finishing.
It's what you mentioned, lucky spot on, because we've played the last couple of World Cups on spite alone. We've gone to a point where everyone's getting bashed. You create a nice little bubble between coach, players, staff, and you say, no one rates us, let's go show them. And again, shouldn't have to get to that point to get to it, but it's our reality. And again, Aussie DNA, there's a truth to that. There's definitely a mentality like that. But again, Asia is continuing to develop. We're having a chat today about all these teams. And when we see ourselves between all these teams, Asia as a continent, as a footballing continent, is improving. They're getting their shit together. Time for us to get our shit together too. Because who knows what it looks like in 4 years' time, in 8 years' time. Yes, it's easy to make a World Cup these days, but there's more teams that are viable to make a World Cup, like you can see in our group. What was it? Bahrain were third and they dropped to fifth or sixth or whatever it was. It can happen like that. And you said, we're not safe hands. It might look like it's in our hands, but those are not hands I trust. It looks like a couple of more comfortable games. But again, Indonesia and China can get tricky. And God forbid that gets tricky, because if that's tricky, Japan at home, Saudi away. Yeah.
And that's the frustrating. Like, this is the other part of this was the window of missed opportunities, because again, beat Saudi and it puts less pressure on going to Saudi later. And then Saudi lost to Indonesia. Like, Saudi could have lost two games in this window, you know, like that would have been massive for us, for example. Right. But the other thing too, is it's like, yeah, if you're thinking after the Bahrain game, like, hey, we got the point, we saved our blushes, we're still in control of the group, we're still in control of second. Yep, okay, that's great. But at the end of the day, Australia are in the mix with those other teams. It's not like you've dropped down to that level as well. As well as, yeah, of course, like Bahrain are definitely more competitive than people expected. Going to the group, Indonesia, like, to be fair, you talk about a team that's probably been a little bit unfortunate and could definitely have more points. I mean, Indonesia could be in control of the second right now for sure. Looking at some of their results, they should have been Bahrain away, for example. They were pretty good against China away too, Saudi Arabia away. Like, they've played some really good games. But like, the bigger picture is that, you know, we're closer to the Bahrains and Indonesias of the world than Japan. Like, that's the reality. The group tells 1,000 words, that table, you know?
Yeah, and we say that, and I completely agree, but you see the games. Create one chance in the Gold Coast and take it. Go to Saudi in Melbourne and take one chance that you score the tap-in, and then you go to Bahrain and either Cassini Yangi takes one more of his multiple chances, or you don't cop two of the weirdest goals in the history of football. And suddenly, those are, what is it? How many extra points is that? 3, 6, 7 extra points.
Yeah.
I think I'm... Yes,
that's seven. Seven extra, yeah.
Again, and then it's a different conversation, and we're also semi-cruising. So even though I do agree that we are falling to that level, if you have someone, or you can take a chance here or there, or you're not completely deplorable in the Gold Coast, it's a completely different conversation. And again, perception is often reality. Our perception is we feel quite crappy about ourselves, and that's fair enough. And sometimes results paper over that, as we saw with the famous Graham Arnold winning streak or undefeated streak or whatever that was. But that's perception, and perception can be reality. Number one, for the fans, because they're like, my team wins. And second, for the players as well, because guess what? If you're confident, you're feeling like we go in and we win games, when you're in front of goals, you score them, because in your mind you think, we win games, I score goals. So it's all those intangibles that you can't measure that play into this. But yeah, perception is reality, and I reckon those two are pretty close right now.
But that's the last point on this before we wrap up. It's about perception as well. I don't understand. Like, you know, we lost to Bahrain in the Gold Coast, right? And then we're going to Bahrain away, and people were like coming out of it being like, how on earth did we not win 4-0? It's like, I don't know, like, you know, they outplayed us last time. You know, they actually got the better of us. Like, we're not a dominant team. We're not.
Can I just say also, and this is a broader point on society in general and the casual football fan,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of ignorance. A lot of ignorance about...
That's the understatement of the century,
To paraphrase, who is it? I know that there's a lot of ignorance, because no one from Bahrain plays in the Premier League. No one can name a player. Mm-hmm. When you go to Saudi, a lot of their names are foreign to you. A lot of the names are similar. Well, that does not matter in football, because there's 11 guys and there's 11 other guys. And whoever plays a better football and puts that round thing in the net more times gets the points. Now, there's a lot of people that, if it doesn't play in the Premier League, Serie A, League on, and you go on in those leagues, if it doesn't play there, I don't recognize it, let alone in Asia. There's also the A-League fans that love the A-League, may love Europe, that don't recognize that either. But to our eyes, people that follow it, we know Saudi's a really good side that with really good players. We know Bahrain's improving. We can see it. But to the general public, and most importantly, the mainstream media, Australia lost to Bahrain. We don't lose to those countries. And then you get the pitchforks out and a mob emerges that doesn't really know what they're going on
about. But even that, but like last, even that, like, we don't lose to those countries. It's like, I was actually writing something at the moment, and I came across this today. In the qualifying for the 2010 World Cup, this is like, you know, in the later stages of the Golden Generation team, Australia went to Bahrain in their group and like needed a 93rd minute winner from Mark Bresciano to win. Like, systemically, over even good Australian teams, they struggled in these games. It's never been dominant, and it probably never will be unless, yeah, we form into some sort of juggernaut like Japan. But guess what? It ain't happening soon. So, yeah, it's people need to wake up to reality, essentially. All right, let's put a bow on it.
I think that's a lot of it is just straight up like racism. I think a lot of people were just saying, oh, we're white Australians. We should be dominating these Asian teams easily. And I think that leads to a lot of underestimating of these teams. And like, they just think, oh, these Chinese play people, they don't play football. They play like freaking table tennis or some shit like that. Like,
sorry, Caitlin. You know when we go and play in South America and you see those comments when we beat them? It's like, there's kangaroos and surfers just beat us. It's the same
exactly,
thing.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. Because they don't see it. They don't clock it. We don't see it, or our society doesn't see it. They don't clock it. So it's, again, it's a mass hysteria thing in general. And again, the general public is not going to get educated. Again, having worked in retail, you figure out that the common logic and common sense is not very common. So
Cole's Bakery teaches you a lot.
What you can do is, again, improve your perception and why the general football fan won't bring up that game, Christian, with Bresciano scoring the 93rd minute, is because Bresciano scored in the 93rd minute and we didn't cop one. So that's the thing, because history remembers once a couple of things: goal scorer, winner. That's it. people remember the Gold Coast. People won't remember the game last night. So again, it's all about perceptions and the reality of it. And again, my reality is cooked because I've put the Gold Coast. I put this morning's game yesterday. I put it tomorrow. I need to stop talking timelines because it's not going well.
You put it this day as well.
Yeah, let's try again.
All right, let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll just do a quick rundown of the weekend's fixtures in the A-League men, the Unite round, give some predictions. Okay, so as mentioned, Antonis and I will be at Unite round, and yeah, we've got some interesting games this weekend. Of course, all the men's games happening at Allianz Stadium, as I mentioned earlier, all the women's games now at Jubilee Stadium in Kogarah. So we're going to do some predictions. First of all, for both of you, Antonis, I'll start with you. What game catches your eye here for the weekend? Or I guess, what are your thoughts on Adelaide United against Brisbane Roar? That's probably the more maybe pertinent question here.
Yeah, I am looking forward to Adelaide United Brisbane Roar again, seeing how Adelaide United progresses because again, it's been a really positive start to the season, but you need to continue backing it up. I am very intrigued though by Auckland against
MacArthur.
Macarthur because again, I reckon those two styles, it's always going to be a thing of who wants the ball, kind of
Little
thing because I can
bit, yeah.
see both teams wanted to counter, and I don't feel like Auckland have faced a team so that fully goes out to play exactly, or not exactly, but very similar to them. Because both teams seem very confident in what they do. I'd like to see what happens when those two clash and see how those teams react. But again, a few very tasty games. Obviously, the derby. Enough said there. And I'm not talking about the Sydney derby. I'm talking about the juicy F3 one on
Well,
Friday.
yeah, obviously, I think we'll both, yeah, you know,
But yeah, no.
two teams who are really attractive at the moment, Newcastle and Mariners. Yeah.
It's just it's I really like the timing of it because there's just a lot of intrigue of it when you come off an international window and you haven't watched them play in a week. It almost feels like it's been a month, and it almost feels like a fresh start. And even like someone like Perth, you can say, "Oh, can you get a fresh start here?" Really intrigued by everything, and really looking forward to seeing some storylines like the ones mentioned play out. So fun times.
Caden?
Yeah, I think for me, maybe Perth or Western United would see which team will be less mid, and then
when you said that game, I was about to say, oh, the mid derby.
the mid
Then,
would be good for them because they're a bit lower.
No, I think Western will win that game easily, but yeah, no. But seriously, in seriousness, I think Wellington Phoenix and Melbourne Victory will be another really interesting game. I think that'll be a really good game to watch with Chiefy focusing on the transitional style against PK, who's like total possession dominance. So, who's going to come out on top on that? So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of good games with this Unite round.
Yeah, I totally agree. Wellington Victory is, yeah, my game of the round there. For sure. I'm absolutely fascinated by Wellington at all times, but yeah, particularly after their performance last week and what they're kind of working towards, they are extremely fascinating at the moment. And to see if they can actually like take the game Melbourne Victory in a bit more of a proactive way than what we've seen from them, say, last season. All right, score predictions. Let's start. Perth Glory, Western United. First game on the Friday night, 5:30 Eastern time. Antonis, score.
2-1 Western United.
Caden.
I'm gonna go 4-0 Western United.
Jesus.
Grim.
Perth did me dirty last week. Me and Matt backed them to win, and then they served up that absolute abomination against Melbourne City. So they can get lost for this week. I'll go 2-1 as well, like Antonis for Western United. Wow, Caden thinks Western are going to score 4 goals in a game. That's bold. Anyway, Jets Mariners, second game on the Friday. Antonis.
Tough one. Let's go with Central Coast 3-1.
Cad. Yeah.
I'm going to go 1-0 in Newcastle Jets.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Eli Adams to score.
Is that Vic Wright?
Yep. Well,
Yeah.
no, he's Brisbane from
No, no, he's
Queensland.
Queenslander, isn't he? Yeah,
Yeah,
no,
he's
he's a
from Brisbane. That's
Queenslander.
hashtag Queensland build facilities.
I'll go 2-0 to the Mariners. This is kind of a perfect game for them to get their mojo back a little bit. Brisbane, Adelaide, Antonis, Brisbane, Adelaide.
Too old.
Well, I'll go 1-0 Adelaide.
I'll go 1-1-1-1. Adelaide should have had their dumb result against Western, but VAR wasn't working, so I think they'll have their dumb result this week against Brisbane. Anyway, to be fair, they were the better team against Western. Anyway, Sydney Derby. This is interesting. Antonis.
I almost feel dirty backing the home team in this game because that should never happen these days. But I will back Sydney FC to do it. Let's call it 2-0.
Yeah, I was going to go 3-0 Sydney FC.
Jeez. This is a difficult one because the Wanderers did have that Newcastle win, and regardless of what you think about Newcastle, it did kind of give them a little bit of a confidence boost. But and also we don't know about like the Lolly and Costa sort of health going into this game. But I'll go 1-0 Sydney.
And
1-0
also,
Sydney.
this is a fixture that we see again, the away side win a
Well,
lot. So
Sydney didn't win the last derby at home at Allianz, to be fair.
they did. You're
The
right. I had
Kucharski
another
winner.
point I wanted to bring up, but my brain's not working.
Well, the last November derby at Allianz, we were there. That was the Yengi winner. Yeah.
I want to say that's the other thing I wanted to bring. It's round is the real unity's anti-Sydney FC unity we found out last year. So maybe the crowd can spur the Wanderers home. And hopefully my agent and Caden's agent can be happy by the end of it as well with a really good contribution from our Spanish compatriot or colleague, maybe. That's the word I'm looking for.
Who?
Colleague.
Oh, matter.
A Spanish colleague.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're represented by the same agent.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be funny if he's on the bench again. Anyway, so moving to
Let's go,
Sunday.
Adelaide. We do
Well,
Spanish well here.
that's true. Wellington victory for Antonis.
You know what? Give me Wellington 1-0.
Tiffy,
I've been
Caden.
hearing a bit of Victory Invincibles chatter, and when that pops up, that usually dies right down. So,
Yeah.
by the place.
Infamously, that died a couple years ago when someone made a big prediction.
But again, no better place for it to die than a place where everyone gathers for the greater good. And everyone loves putting the boot down into the big blue that's not involved in it. And we talked about putting the boot down to Sydney FC last year. It could be victory this year. So, again, Wellington 1-0. Would love to see it.
I'm gonna go 1-1 draw. I think Melbourne are going to struggle without Nishan Billy play. So yeah.
I am going to be really boring and say a nil or draw. I think it's going to be a tactical stalemate, this one.
I can
So
see that.
yeah, I think they could cancel each other out. Nil nil. Last game, MacArthur, Auckland. Antonis.
That's my Nilo.
Well, Caden.
Yeah, I reckon Millwall as well.
I'll go 2-2. I think MacArthur are just like. If I was doing predictions before the season, I would go on all MacArthur's fixtures, just go win loss, win loss, win loss, win loss, and I'm probably gonna end up being like 80% right. So yeah, like they just had a great win against Sydney, and I could probably expect them like having to come back from 2-0 down or something in this game. Yeah, so 2-2. The other thing with Auckland, Antonis, you mentioned before, but first time they're traveling, so it's gonna be very interesting to see how they
And
cope
they
with
haven't
that.
topped the goal yet.
No. So if they concede first, something like that, see how they react. And Melbourne City taking on the bye. What do we think?
Melbourne City 3-0.
I'm getting, well, sucks that you're not invited.
That? Wasn't there like some City fan on Twitter who like absolutely lost it at like the APL that
I
City
would as
weren't
well.
invited?
Well, yeah, this is my tip. Canberra, we need you.
Well, yeah. And then no one misses out, you know?
Hashtag, that would really, hashtag fold the bye.
Yeah, and that would really unite the Unite round. No yeah, one's
it
left
is
out.
Very ironic that someone doesn't cop an invite to Unite round.
Well, yeah.
But again, at least we've got Melbourne City Women's coming along, so it's good to have them.
Mm.
All right. You should just get free tickets to all the games, and they just get to sit on the sidelines from like a front row in the background of all games.
What if it's like the Melbourne City players can attend, and like they can be used as like wild card subs or something, like if needed. Mm. I don't fucking know. There's like some rule. It's like all the
ball boys.
Yeah, it's like hey, Nathaniel Atkinson. You know, Perth needs some extra quality against Western. I don't know. Well, anyway,
been there, tried that, haven't they, Perth?
Oh yeah, true. Man, you're quick on that. Wow. Anyway, Jesus, how did you pull that one? Like, that is a very like, yeah, if you know, you know, sort of A-League story. All right, guys, that'll do for the podcast. Any closing remarks? Anything from your agent that you want to pass on to me?
He'll communicate with you via another podcast in due time.
Okay.
Yeah, he will be in contact through what's his name? McBrain's podcast.
Wow. Robbie Thompson copying strays, yeah, because that's also Robbie his Thompson. Podcast.
I couldn't think of his name.
Yes, everyone, just enjoy not having to have your reality ruined by the Socceroos until the new year. You've all earned it. Let's do this again in March. I'm looking forward to it.
And those heading in Unite round, enjoy finding different modes of travel outside of Sydney trains. Yeah, because rip. All right. That'll do for the podcast. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Antonis. Thanks to Caden. And yeah, hopefully when we do the next Socceroos themed podcast come March, we are having some more pleasant discussions about the national team. Let's wait and see. Anyway, that'll do it for this episode of the podcast. We'll be back next week. Until next time, it's bye for now.